Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for the day, Friday, October 21st, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
A lot of things going on today. Things are up, down, sideways, in a circle. You name it, that's what it's been today. And it's a Friday, so maybe that's also part of it. Gold today did manage, still struggling, 180. 180 for gold, 1268. It's pretty much just topping about the high for the day. So silver, 1760, up a penny, just off a couple cents. Certainly off the low, though, of the day, so it did climb back. Platinum was down $2, still in the downward trend, 936, along with palladium down 10 at $625. You have, and you might still see pressure. I think palladium is what's pulling down that sector, and, because I really did think it was extremely overpriced, and how low she'll go, I'm not sure, but, again, I expect to see a little bit of a turnaround here shortly for platinum. And as I mentioned throughout this week and part of last week, I really did thought we found the bottoms for both gold and silver, and it seems that was the case. So USDX today was up 0.38 at 98.68, along with crude oil up 24 at 50.87. And the paper markets today, they were up, down, and around. The Dow was down 15 points, 18,146. The NASDAQ, that was up 15 at 52.57. The S&P basically unchanged at 21.41. 10-year yield, 1.74%. The euro was down 0.43. Still a lot of pressure on the euro at 109. European markets basically unchanged overnight. So some interesting things in the news today. Yesterday, we reported on the Philippines president, Duterte. Yesterday, he says, well, he's severing the ties with the U.S. Well, he must have gotten a phone call. Because now all of a sudden, he says, no, he's not severing ties with his country's longtime ally, the United States, but just merely pursuing a more independent foreign policy by strengthening their relationships with China. And So certainly after he arrives back in the Philippines after his four-day visit to Beijing, you know, he had a little bit of a different tune, although there was a lot of the people of the Philippines were burning U.S. flags and so forth, and they actually did seem to be want the ties. He goes on and says, it is not severance of ties. When you say severance of ties, you cut diplomatic relations. I cannot do that. The Philippine leader told reporters at a midnight news conference in his southern home city, it is the best interest of my countrymen to maintain that relationship.
Because then they can give us financial support or we can give them financial support.
Yeah, that's, well, I'll let you choose, Al.
I guess we'd better keep our relationship with Uncle George because he may leave us a bunch of money.
Yes, yeah. Yes. He said, I announced my separation from the United States, he had said, to sustained applause yesterday. So that was pretty much, so yes, he got the phone call from someone. And, of course, today he is clarifying his comments to what he really meant. And so I thought that was interesting. And
that's a constant theme with politicians. I didn't mean what I said. Now I mean what I said. But
a
I didn't mean it then. Let me explain to you. Now I'm going to explain to you. And if this doesn't work, then next week I'll explain to you what I really mean when I'm speaking today.
A true politician. And with that, a U.S. Navy destroyer sailed near islands. This was claimed by China in the South China Sea today. And that drew a warning for the Chinese warships to leave the area. The U.S. action was the latest attempt to counter what Washington sees as Beijing's efforts to limit freedom of navigation in the strategic waters. The Chinese Defense Ministry called the move illegal. Said that the two Chinese warships had warned the U.S. destroyer to leave. And the latest U.S. patrol was first reported by Reuters. Is expected to anger Beijing and could further escalate tensions. The destroyer sailed within waters claimed by China, close to, but not within the 12 nautical mile territorial limit of the islands. And the White House did confirm the Reuters report. So the Pentagon said that the Decatur conducted this transit in a routine, lawful manner without ship escorts and without incidents. So seems to be pretty much what Washington seems to enjoy is to,
provoke.
Provoke. Yeah. So
I understand China enjoys it too, though. There have been reports in the last month or so of Chinese jet aircraft fighters coming close to the islands that are claimed by Japan. Everybody's trying to provoke everyone else, and I don't understand exactly why. If we could just get somebody else to start the war, then we'd be happy. We don't want to start it ourselves, you understand? Chinese don't want to start, Japanese don't want to start it. But it seems like there are more than a few people that actually want a war. And you have to wonder, are they going to become sensible, rational, reasonable, and say, you know, people could get killed if we start another war. Maybe that makes it a bad idea. Or are they going to say, you know, just collateral damage, they die.
Yeah, we're just collateral damage. That's all we are. Okay. I don't think that would stop them.
No, it never has, really. I mean, at times they don't get into as many wars as they might like to, but it seems to be...
They have to have something to do, Al.
I guess. I don't know. I think it has something to do with the quality of television. You know, if we're not really, we really don't have a good group of people on Dancing with the Stars, well, what the heck, let's start a war then. We can watch that instead.
But really, you do have all these generals in these countries and so forth. I mean, that's what they're trained to do, is fight wars, and you know, you can't, you know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, but you know, this country used to have the Department of War. They changed it to the Department of Defense. But when it was called the Department of War, I think we were more of a defensive country, and it was our military was prepared to defend us in the case that we were dragged into a war. Now that we have the Department of Defense, they're not trying to defend. I mean, if they were trying to defend, they might protect our borders from an invasion by illegal aliens, but they're not going to get into that. But they are interested in instigating war and police actions around the world, and you wind up shaking your head at it, because what are you going to do? And yet it just seems so irrational. It seems wrong. It's wicked. And yet people just, let's have a war over there. Let's go kill some people. I mean, we destroyed Libya. Libya was the wealthiest country in Africa. And our recent invasions in support of the overthrow of Colonel Gaddafi just destroyed Libya. Ruined it.
What for?
What did we get out of that? And I guess what we got was Colonel Gaddafi was threatening to create a pan-African currency that was backed by gold. And I believe that was the reason ultimately he was overthrown. I don't think he realized what he was getting into with that. But he dared to challenge the supremacy of the dollar in particular and fiat currency in general. And that is a ticket for an early retirement. Anyone out there, if you're interested in early retirement, make a credible attack on the fiat monetary system and advocate gold, and you may be retired. Your jersey may be retired, you may be retired, hard to say. But we destroyed that country. What are we doing in the Middle East? We have no reason to be there. The only reason we're there right now is because we're dumb enough to get into this situation, and now, rather than admit we were dumb enough, we're going to try to brazen it out and look as a, and try to leave it looking peace with honor, right? Which is what we called it back in the Vietnam era when Nixon finally said, we're out of there. Peace with honor. Oh, bunk. Just more nonsense. And you don't even want to call it nonsense. It's worse than that. And it takes place. And the reason they get away with it, or one of the reasons, during the Vietnam War, we had all the demonstrations, of course, and even bombings and violence, whatever. Why? Because there was a draft. And kids that were going to college or college age could be hauled off to fight in Vietnam, and a bunch of them just said, I'm not interested in dying in some damn jungle. Are you crazy? I'm not going. And the result of the draft and trying to coerce people to go fight and perhaps die for some stupid reason that is not clear even to this day, the draft is what really precipitated all of the political dissension and the anti-war activities that we saw during the Vietnam War. They ended the draft, and now we don't really care. If people are dumb enough to go to vote to join, or dumb enough to join the Army, Marines, Air Force, whatever, and get tangled up in one of these idiotic wars, well, nobody's forcing them. You know? So if you want to go and maybe risk your life, go ahead. We don't care. But there isn't, we don't see, so long as no one's being forced to go to war, we don't see any serious anti-war activity in this country. And I think maybe we should. You know, we seem to go from war to war to war to war to police action to whatever. It can't be right. There's something wrong with this, and as a people, we don't stop it because we're not being forced into the war, so we don't care. Well, I don't know. We cannot continue to engage in war after war after war after war. And police action and police action in Syria, for example. What are we doing there other than maybe fighting to implement or stop a pipeline that ultimately comes from Saudi Arabia and heads to Europe? That's all this is about. This is about special interests and the ability to make millions, billions, trillions of dollars. That's all. That's why we're there. People are going to die. So some other people can make a bunch of money.
And as much as you people might dislike Assad, he still kept the peace.
Yeah.
Well, one time, you know, Christians could live there.
Yeah.
And not be headless.
Yep.
And so, you know, again, he was also like Saddam Hussein. Yeah, these are not nice guys. They're not nice people.
Who is? And who is in politics?
And, you know, we have these people. They're so, well, they, you know, they do genocide to their people and blah, blah, blah. Well, take a look at what you've done to various people around this world. How many people have we've killed for the sake of, you know, some sort of special interest? So, you know, it's, and if Hillary's elected, it won't, you know, and I didn't take notice on this when on the debate, and I do want to get into some economics here, some things that are going on. When she described Mosul, whatever, tomato, tomato, she didn't even know the location of it. She said it was on the border to Syria. That way they could, Mosul is not even close to the border. You know, and then she was saying some other things that, so, you know, considering you were the Secretary of State, I mean, you should pretty much know the exact location of, so very few people picked up on it.
Certainly, I doubt if she needed certainly to the know media, the location of Mosul because I don't think she got any bribes from Mosul.
Gary Johnson didn't know what Aleppo was, so, you know, I mean, tit for tat, but, you know. You know, media lets her go, but, you know, something small like that. But, hey, you know, it is what it is. It is little, but it's just something else that just shows you, she's evil. But anyway,
The idea that you need to know all these facts is, to me, overblown.
Donald Trump, no. But she was first lady that traveled the world. She was senator in New York. She was secretary of state, and she's running on her record of her ability to communicate with various countries. No, she should not be mistaken.
I agree on her based on her experience, but I'm just saying, once you get into the office, somebody comes up and says, "We have a problem." All right, you can't know everything that's going on the face of the earth.
My whole point.
Somebody comes in and says, "You got a problem. Here's what the facts are as we understand them. Here's the location." And then it's up to the president, for example, to make some sort of a decision. The idea that the president right now should be equipped and able to say exactly what he's going to do with every problem that comes up, you know, it's just unreasonable.
I'm not saying they should know what they're going to do.
I didn't say you did.
But the whole point is, anyway, I want to talk about SocGen's Andrew Lapthorne. He's the global head of quantitative strategy. And he posed this question to his bank's clients. And he says he thinks investors are in denial about how dim the outlook is for American businesses. He says asset valuations are extreme, returns are poor, the probability of losses is high, and the ability to recover any losses quickly is low. In particular, the strategist sounded an alarm over the state of corporate America's balance sheet. Company spending exceeds cash flows by a near record amount, a fundamentally unsustainable situation as net debt continues to increase at a rapid pace. We talked all the time on this about corporations buying back their own shares. They've used debt to repurchase their own stock and flattering their bottom line financial performance. They also borrow to pay their dividends, and the U.S. corporate balance sheets are a major risk going forward. U.S. corporates are massively overspending. And he says, to be fair, servicing this debt load isn't as onerous as it might appear because of low interest rates. But what happens once these borrowing rates begin to inch upward? So the overall long haul, the performance of stock markets will be primarily driven by earnings increases, and the level of corporate indebtedness implies that any latitude to boost earnings per share by shrinking the denominator is limited. And we're going to talk a little bit about corporate earnings when we get back. Profits have fallen for 5 straight quarters. This is the longest skid since the last recession. And that's according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis. So corporate America is and what happens when corporate America isn't doing their earnings? Means little jobs are lost.
And some of the illegal aliens are going home.
Well, I don't
voluntarily. They're going to make a buck here. We're going back to Mexico.
Those aren't the jobs that will be lost. It'll be the middle class jobs that'll be lost.
Hi, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Many, many people have experienced the benefits of drinking all-natural Life Change tea. The unique blend of 8 herbs helps detoxify your body so you can live a healthier life. Numerous testimonies have been given about the benefits of drinking Life Change tea. So, are you drinking Life Change tea? Interested? Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Many are so impressed with our product, they order a year's supply. And why not? When they do, they receive 2 months free. That's a $70 savings. The body is meant to heal itself. Sometimes a body just needs a little help. Get the tea at GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Or call us at 928-308-0408. That's 928-308-0408. This is not an ordinary green tea, and it's not available in stores. This tea helps with digestive problems, acid reflux, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and as talk show host Jerry Doyle says, it'll make you as regular as a baby bird. Enjoy your life. Get Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to finish up on this about the corporate balance sheets and how, you know, foreign banks are looking at our, you know, corporations as, you know, there's some major risks in the very near future. Our U.S. corporates are overspending just to keep their shares high. You know, and as long as the rates don't go any higher, as long as there's low rates, yeah, they could continue to service the debt. Not much difference in the government. You know, as long as the rates are low, yeah, they could, you know, they can get by and service the debt. But once those rates start to rise, you know, they can't pay it. And the whole thing collapses. And the level of corporate indebtedness, again, implies that any latitude to boost earnings per share by shrinking the denominator is limited. And corporate America is facing that uphill battle to make money and may soon become more aggressive in its cost cutting amid sluggish demand and scant pricing power. Payrolls will downshift this year and continue to slow in 2017. Companies are going to have to employ fewer workers, and eventually they're going to have to start laying them off because they're going to have very weak profits. They already have weak profits due to the stronger dollar. So, you know, unless things change, and, you know, maybe we will see something change. Maybe we will get pressure on the dollar. Maybe this will be able to allow them to go a little bit longer, a little bit further into the year and so forth. I think 2017, and again, after the elections, and I think come May is when you'll really begin to start seeing the cracks of our economy begin to come apart. And the profits have been a pretty accurate bellwether of the economy. Only once in the post-World War II era in the 80s have earnings slid at least five consecutive quarters without coinciding with a recession.
In fact, I think typically, if my understanding is correct, if they have profits down for two consecutive quarters, that typically signals a recession, and right now they're saying we're in a recovery. I mean, just look at this. We have a political system that is based increasingly on overt lies. People are just looking you in the eye and lying to you. But it goes beyond that. We've got a corporate sector that has devised schemes like we will buy our own stock. We'll borrow money to buy our own stock, and it'll look good. It'll make the relative dividends for shareholders will go up, and they'll be happy. But it's an illusion. It's not based on being more productive. It's based on devising ways to deal with the pressures that are being created by the government and the Federal Reserve.
The Federal Reserve's latest Beige Book business survey showed restaurants are shelving expansion plans as wage growth erodes already tight margins. Pacific corporations sank as the railroad struggled to boost prices. Delta Airlines, they're going to limit plans to expand seats and flights to bolster fares. You have HP Inc., the computer maker. They're going to cut as many 4,000 jobs over the next couple of years. So, you know, unless there's some sort of a dramatic pickup in the U.S., which I don't see that happening, you know, we're going to see the pressures, you're going to see the cracks widen. And all those previous predictions, you can just throw them out the air, because I do believe 2017 is going to be the, and it could be even in the fall of 2017 if we get that far. Joshua Shapiro, he's the chief U.S. economist at Maria Fiorini. He says it's coming. He says the pressure on margins is going to intensify as we go through next year. It'll result in increasingly aggressive cost cutting, which means much slower job growth, which will then weigh on consumer spending and the overall economy. And you know what you mentioned about lies, and I saw something on, I saw it on the internet, so it must be true, Al. But the definition of stupid is knowing the truth, seeing the truth, but still believing the lies. And
well, that's also called political correctness.
Perhaps.
Same thing. Well, we know what the truth is, but it's not politically acceptable at this time, so we're going to ignore the truth. We're going to be politically correct. Which means you're lying. That's what political correctness is. You know, when you talk about the concept of being correct, you can correct, you're right or you're wrong. If we are politically correct, by definition, it means we aren't really correct in the sense of being true or false. It means as soon as you start talking about political correctness, you're talking about lies. You're talking about illusions, delusions. And my point when we talk about lies in society in general and in politics and in corporations and the rest of it, I look at it and I just wonder, how long can this hold together based on lies? That goes to bubbles. It goes to artificially low interest rates. It goes to negative interest rates. They've got one lie after another, and they, again, they stand up, look you in the eye, and make you believe that this is all reasonable and rational. I think it's not. I think sooner or later this stuff has to blow up. All right? And I don't know. I'm not anticipating. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if we see another recession. But that's not what I'm anticipating. Sooner or later, this thing's going to crash. It's not going to be a little bit of a soft landing. Sooner or later, this thing is going to crash like a sports car piling into a brick wall. There's going to be a problem. And, you know, if I'm correct in that, most of the people, I think, listening to this program would probably agree. You got to do what you can to protect yourself and make sure you're not in that sports car when it hits the brick wall. I don't see any way to stop the collision. We don't know exactly when it's going to happen. I don't see a way of stopping it. It's just a question of when, and also who is riding in that sports car. I'm trying not to ride in the sports car.
Well, I'll be Well, no, and you do make a point, Alan, and it's coming. And, you know, the whole point of these are just more signs that, you know, they have created this illusion. They have created this and have spread with enough lies. People believe the lies.
You know.
And even, I mean, every day, multiple times, anyone you talk to outside of those that really, that, you know, those that mainly listen to mainstream media, of course, you know, they'll tell you, well, I think there's something wrong with the economy. Now, maybe things aren't as good as what they should be, but yet they continue to believe that their investments are safe and they feel confident that they'll be taken care of by the government.
And well, that's because they're afraid to do their own homework. And they don't trust in their own perception. Yeah. And they have to. You're at a time in the world where you're going to have to do your own thinking. You're going to have to trust in your own perception. You're going to have to act on what you see to be the truth. If you're able to see it, if you have the courage to see it, the intelligence to see it, you're going to have to act on it. If you don't, you're going to pay a price. I don't think you can continue to just ride with the herd and think, you know, it's, they used to say 60 million Frenchmen can't be wrong. Yes, they can. And same thing with a couple hundred million Americans. We can be making terrible mistakes, and I think we have, again, given up, you know, we harp on it on a regular basis on this program, but abandoning the gold and silver coin that's mandated at Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution of the United States. And, oh, no, we don't need that. We'll just, we'll work with this fiat currency. We'll use a piece of, we'll use a piece of paper that is intrinsically worthless and issued as a debt instrument, and we'll use that to replace our gold and silver, which were the foundation for asset-based instruments. And it'll all work out fine. No, it won't. It may have worked out for a couple of decades, a couple of generations. But just the same, this is lunacy. And insofar as we've embraced it, we're sooner or later, we're going to have to take our meds. Right. Sooner or later, we're going to be locked up. Sooner or later, we're going to be in the some sort of an economic straitjacket or a political straitjacket until we learn our lesson. And one of the lessons is you need an asset-based monetary system rather than a debt-based monetary system. You learn that lesson, we can get back on track. Don't want to learn the lesson, can't learn the lesson, too ignorant to learn the lesson. Afraid to learn the lesson? Well, we're gonna keep on sliding downward until we get back to a reality that's based on truth rather than lies and delusions.
And you should be afraid, and you should be very afraid if you don't protect what you have. There was a recent report from Moody's estimated that total unfunded pension liabilities, or the amount of pension plans owe versus what they have across the U.S. state public pension plans, is forecast to increase 40%. To $1.75 trillion through fiscal year 2017. I just got this from Money and Markets. In fact, by some accounts, that figure could be closer to $4 trillion when you consider all state and local government pension plans. I mean, those are incredible numbers for unfunded pension liabilities, and we know most pension funds are going to have some sort of, you know, of those state and treasuries in your accounts. And these unfunded liabilities just keep getting bigger and bigger because there hasn't been, because of the such low returns. And again, bad management.
And who is responsible for low returns?
Federal Reserve, government.
Yeah, that's right, because they're holding interest rates so low.
But they can't raise
you have to engage in riskier and riskier investments if you want to make some sort of a profit on your investments. Ordinary investments that might other times be considered safe are no longer productive because the Federal Reserve has held the interest rate at artificially low rates for 7-8 years now. That's what the problem is. That's why people, that's perhaps there are, it's not the only problem. But it is one of the primary reasons why people who think they can rely on pensions, government pensions, private pensions, whatever, You're in a terrible bind as long as the Federal Reserve continues to hold interest rates down. The pension programs are based on the assumption that they're going to make 6, 7, 8% return on their investments over the years. They're not. They're going to make maybe 2 under current circumstances. That means pensions are going to be, they're going to just suffer. People aren't going to be able to retire off of the pensions they think they're going to have access to. And you can trace the reason back to the Federal Reserve, who said, well, we'll hold interest rates down next to nothing. Maybe we'll even go into negative interest rates. There's a brilliant idea. And it will stimulate the economy. Only it's not stimulating the economy. And this is a real, this is something that I want to understand. And I'm looking for an answer on this, and I don't say that I have it yet. But we see the same thing in Japan. They keep trying stimulus, and the Japanese people aren't buying it. They're refusing to be stimulated. All right? They lower interest rates, they print more money, blah, blah, blah. The economists say, well, this should make the idiots out there go out and buy more stuff. The people aren't buying more stuff.
They already have everything they need.
Maybe.
How many shirts can you, how many cell phones can you have?
But the system is not, there's something wrong here. There's something fundamentally wrong where the public is not responding, reacting as expected by the programmers, our central planners and governments. Well, we push these buttons. And the morons will do what we want them to do. The morons are not doing what the government wants them to do.
Part of it is an aging demographic, too. But they don't have the children. At least we have an aging demographic also. But there's still a lot of money there. There's still a lot of money so far in those pensions and so forth, retirement accounts and everything that I figured. I mean, there's over $20 trillion sitting there, you know, that'll probably be given to their children and grandchildren. So eventually that'll come back if they don't lose it before then, which I think that'll be the $20 trillion will be reduced to, what, $5
trillion? Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's still not likely $5 trillion. To be $10 trillion, but it's not likely to be reduced by merely $10 trillion by half.
No.
It's likely to be more than half.
That.
So,
And listen to this, in California, who do you think is going to have to pay for those unfunded liabilities? Where do you think they're going to, even if they reduce them, their liability is estimated at $950 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Everyone who has a little job and pays taxes, you know, it's the taxpayer they'll go to first. After
the, absolutely. They're going to get the idiot taxpayers, the voters, the idiot voters. And there's a certain rationale behind this, a certain justification. As a people, we have been stupid enough to elect a bunch of incompetent, scheming hustlers and con artists into the cat house on the Potomac, which is the Congress and the Senate and the White House. We put them in there. We bought their BS. And we were dumb enough, or optimistic enough, or stupid enough, or drunk enough, or whatever. We put them in office. I don't know. It is appropriate. All right? There is a certain kind of what goes around comes around. There's a reflection here of the concept of karma. We played the fool. Now we're going to pay the fool's price. All right? Or at least some of us are. The only thing I object to about it is, the government right now says, listen, we got to get these kids, these young people, they have to step up and pay the bills for their idiot grandparents and their idiot parents. And the kids, if they have any brains at all, are going to figure out a way to say, we ain't paying any of that. These people were dumb enough to make these, government was dumb enough to make these idiot promises and say, I know, we'll use deficit financing, and we can enjoy ourselves now, and we'll leave the debts for our kids and our grandkids. Isn't that a great idea? And now, and of course, it's a wrong idea. It's not a great idea. It's a wicked idea. We should be paying our bills as we go. There shouldn't be any deficit financing where we leave the debt to a free to a generation that may not even be born yet, and it's certain, and in many instances, at least isn't even old enough to know what's going on, not old enough to vote, and yet we're going to leave them with the debt. The debt should be charged to whatever generation incurred the debt. And we should have, you know, pay-as-you-go system rather than deficit financing, and we'll leave it. We'll put, kick the can down the road, and somehow it'll all work out. No, it's not going to work out.
Before we go into the break, you know, we have to remember that we're going into break, and I'll just have to remember to do this when we come back. Right, Al?
Yes, right. But
okay.
You're going to have to close it
all
up.
All right. We'll be right back, folks.
Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
But I mean, here he's
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And what's next, Melody?
I just wanted to finish up with these pensions and we can go on, but you know, we're talking about cities, you know, they all have problems. L.A., Chicago, New York, Philly, all the big cities. Remember, we've already had Stockton. And I, if I remember correctly, it was Stockton who set precedence because they did allow the...
For bankruptcy.
Yeah. And so, and it's just not state and local governments.
No, it's the federal government, too.
We're talking about also U.S. corporations and how they're suffering, too. GM. Again, these are corporate underfunded pension liabilities.
Yep.
GM, $18 billion. General Electric, $27 billion. Alcoa, 37%, estimated at 37% of total debt. IBM at $10 billion, or 7% of its market capitalization, 29% of total debt. So again, folks, that's a lot of money that they can't pay. And there's only two things that they can do.
Which are?
Eliminate and come after the taxpayer.
Well, there's a third thing. It parallels that, and that's hyperinflation. You can get your dollars.
Yeah.
If you have your, you expecting $250,000, $500,000 out of your pension fund, we'll see to it that you get the $500,000. But it'll only have about $50,000
purchasing power.
Thanks to hyperinflation, it'll be wiped out. And they, again, open repudiation, just say, sorry, we can't pay the debt, or they can do hyperinflation and in a stealthy manner repudiate the debt. And it won't be obvious. Most people won't clearly understand what's happening, at least not initially. They won't anticipate what's happening. They won't understand initially what's happening. By the time they do understand it, it'll be too late. Their losses will be guaranteed. And we've been telling you this for 5-6 years. What can't be paid won't be paid. It is the problem. The debt is the problem. They did discuss it on the Trump campaign, the Trump and Hillary debate earlier this week. They talked about the national debt, but they didn't talk about it in a credible way. Nobody is facing the fact that it's too big to be repaid. It's never going to be repaid. Not in full. Some of it may be repaid, yeah, but it's not going to be repaid in full. It can't be. All right? And the other problem they've got is that the debt, people sit back and say, okay, we could just cancel the debt. We could have a jubilee like we do in the Old Testament, like they did in the Old Testament, where they canceled the debt every 50 years. Well, fine, cancel the debt. But the problem is, if you cancel the debt, you wipe out the correlative paper assets. There are bonds sitting in bank vaults and pension funds. And if we cancel the $20 trillion that the government owes on the national debt, and they admit to owing on the national debt, it's probably far more than that, but the official national debt's $20 trillion right now. Okay, let's cancel the $20 trillion. You can't do that without also destroying $20 trillion in bonds that are being used as collateral in banks for loans that are being used in pension funds. How does this economy hold together if you wipe out $20 trillion worth of bonds? The debt can't be canceled. It can't be paid. So what are we going to do with the debt? Does anyone know? I mean, this is a problem for Solomon. You better get Solomon back out here, and because this will require the wisdom of someone who is divinely inspired. How can you... You can't cancel the debt, because if you do, you wipe out the correlative paper... the bonds, U.S. bonds and so on, the debt instruments, you wipe out the value of those bonds. You can't cancel the debt, and you can't pay the debt because it's too big to be paid. What are you going to do? And apparently the only answer I can understand out of this is that they just kick the can further down the road, say, well, we'll just not, you know, tomorrow is another day. We'll deal with the problem tomorrow, or the day after that, or the week after that, or the year after that, or maybe the decade after that. And I don't blame them on one level for kicking the can down the road, because it's all they can do. Can't pay the debt, can't cancel the debt. What are they going to do about the debt? And the debt is a terrible burden, because insofar as we are obligated to pay the debt, that means that whatever we produce right now is going to be diminished. Our ability... We will not be able to enjoy the fruit of our labor today because we're paying the debt on what we've consumed in the past. And there's justice in that. That's sensible and rational. But the problem with that debt is it prevents us from investing in new businesses, new equipment, new technologies, more research. We're busy paying off the debt. We can't invest to increase our productivity. If we were not indebted, we'd be in a position, a better position, to invest. We'd say, okay, we're making X number of dollars. We're not paying it on a debt. What we'll do is, well, let's invest it in some new technology. Let's invest it in some new equipment. Let's invest it in a new plant. Let's hire more people. Let's get to work. Let's be more productive. We can't be more productive while we have a debt that we can't pay. But we're still trying to pay. So we're caught. We're trapped. And what do you do if the whole ship is going down? And that's the way it looks to me in the, you know, the analogy of the Titanic. If the whole ship is going down, all right, it's not my fault. I didn't make the ship sink. I didn't drive the ship into an iceberg or tell people the ship was unsinkable or express this level of arrogance. But we're on that boat. How do you protect yourself? I think you've got to look for the life preservers. I think you have to look for the lifeboats and just say, okay, every man for himself. It's unfortunate, it's sad, but it may be that's the way we're going to have to do this, in part because if you have enough intelligence to see what is at least probably coming, then you have to distance yourself from the people who don't have brains enough to see it or don't have guts enough to face it. You got to say, look, these people are stupid. They're going down. They're going to suffer in ways that they cannot, that they can barely imagine possible. Now, do you want to join them or do you want to try to separate yourself from them and do what you can as much as humanly possible to protect yourself? And it seems to me that the reasonable answer is you're going to do what as much as you can to protect yourself. Huh? And, you know, we do these programs where we try to tell people what we at least think is likely to happen. We're not giving you prophecy. We could be wrong, but we're telling you what the best information we are able to arrive at. Right? We try to communicate that. Some people aren't listening. In fact, most people aren't listening. They don't get it. Maybe we're mistaken, but I don't think we are. It just keeps on getting closer and closer and closer to exactly what we've been predicting for several years. I have thought that we would have seen big trouble long before now. I am pretty much amazed at the system's ability to continue to function despite what I see as insurmountable problems, the debt being probably the biggest one. System keeps on functioning so far, but it keeps winding down, keeps grinding down, keeps slowing down, and everyone is lying to us. You know, I would have more optimism about the system, its future, and its ability to survive if I didn't see lie after lie after lie coming out of the government and the Federal Reserve. They tell us, they give us false numbers on unemployment, they give us false numbers on inflation,
you know, well,
they give us
false numbers
on the debt. It can't, they shouldn't be lying unless they're desperate.
It isn't even the lying, Al. What it is the way they've handled the crisis back in 2008. The way they have handled every recession that we've had since they converted us to a fiat system.
Yep.
I mean, once we converted, hey, people knew in 1933 when they took our gold away from us, and in 1971 they knew exactly what's going to happen. You can predict the future when it comes to a fiat currency. You don't know the timetables. You don't know all the different little, you know, tentacles that are created from this system. I mean, they could show up and be created out of anywhere, but you know what's going to happen. And at the end game, you don't know what happens from point A to point B, what happens in between, or from point A to point C. You don't know what happens in there, but you know what the end game is. The end game is inflation. The end game is a devalued currency. The end game is, folks, you lose unless you protect yourself. That's the end game. That's what we've been preaching. So we've been talking about, Al, for the past so many years, us ever since I've got into this business. That's the end game. We can see the future. We know how it's going to end.
And so do the people that started this.
And it's not the lies from the government. You can see by how they treat the problems. They treat the problems by printing more and more of that fiat currency. Every recession that we have had in the past, we never came out of. It wasn't through good economic fundamentals that we came out of those recessions. It was all different types of programs that were created by debt to get the consumer more and deeper, and this government deeper into debt. All the recessions that we've come out through Wall Street, you know, through the bank, with the banking system, everything was created, the laws, to bring us out of these recessions. It's all fake.
I don't even know if it was to bring us out of the recession or conceal the recession from us.
Well,
we have been deluded into
out.
Thinking we're doing okay when we're not.
This was a way for them to, you're right, to create the illusion that we've recovered from these recessions when we never did. So it's not, you can call that a lie, but to me it's, how they are treating. If they changed, say, hey, we're not going to do this anymore, and we're
they
just going to have
stop.
To see what happens. But we're at the point of no return.
No, no.
It can't be changed.
No, no. It can't.
Care
the
how
only
many
thing
jobs
that can happen
created.
Is it can crack up. There has to be a crash. There has to be just
before
a kind of
fixed.
Utter destruction where everybody says, oh, my God, we can't resolve this and accept that. If we just keep on limping along, people are going to think, well, there's a way. Somehow we can work our way out of this. No, there's not. The debt is too big. We can't be productive while we're paying off the debt. We are caught, trapped. Can't pay the debt, can't cancel the debt. What are you going to do? Only answer is some sort of a collapse, some sort of a crash, maybe a third world war. I don't know what they're going to do, but...
And you know what? If nobody's
take care of it.
Listening...
You got to protect yourself.
If nobody's listening, no one's protecting themselves, what is the point of these programs anymore? You can go listen to these other idiots out there that tell you that gold's going to 700 or, you know, gold finger and, you know... Swiss someplace. And I'm sorry, how many times are they wrong? You know, I was like, what's the point? You know, here we're telling the truth. Maybe people just can't, maybe it is really true. Maybe people really can't handle the truth. Maybe
I don't know
they
if
prefer.
They can or they can't, but a lot of people aren't. That's the problem. In my opinion, they are not handling the truth insofar as I'm able to see
and
it.
And it's hard to mistake. Argue. It is hard to argue and show people, yeah, the Dow was at 6,000 and today it's 18,000.
I know.
You know, hey, and as long as that's at 18,000, no one's going to pay attention to what we're talking about. But just as soon as that Dow, and you know what, there's only 30 companies in the Dow, but it's the barometer. That's what everybody looks at. The Dow, the NASDAQ, the stock markets of the world. You know, Germany, England, you know, that's Japan. As long as they keep them up there, keeping them floating and keeping them where there's not too many, you know, where they don't have 3,000, 5,000 point drops, everybody's fat and happy. Once they start coming down, then people react. But this time, I think if you wait, you're going to be late.
Well, that's, you know, when they do react, they're going to take whatever money they can get. If they see the stock market, the bond market, whatever, the paper markets, they see them begin to collapse, and in my opinion, that's inevitable, although I can't say when, and I don't think it's 40 or 50 years from now. We're talking within, you know, 40 or 50 months, maybe, but not 40 or 50 years.
Here we got an email. Before we close the program, we got an email, and Bob from Iowa. He says, recently he's been reading the work of a few pundits that believe that the EU will come apart in the next year or two. The fear will attract a lot of foreign capital into gold and silver, the U.S. equities, to be followed by the economic demise of Japan and then the U.S., all to happen in the coming 5 years. Whoever becomes the next president, the die is already cast.
I agree. I pretty much agree. I mean, I'm hoping we can get through 5 years. I'm not optimistic.
No.
The probability of a recession or a depression in 2017 is something like double what
high.
It is for the other 3 years of a presidential election cycle. And there is a reason for that. They don't let you have your recessions the year election year because it would cause you to throw the incumbents out of office. They do have increased probability of recessions and or depressions in the first year of a new administration because they can blame it on the previous administration, for one thing. Incumbents don't have to take responsibility. They have 2 years to resolve the problem. If they can, they can play the hero. 2017 is the ideal year for another recession, and I don't doubt we're going to see it. We could see it as early as first quarter. We're out of time for this day, for this week. We will talk to you folks on Monday. Thank you for listening. We will be back at that time. I hope you'll tune in. And in the meantime, the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.